And we're back here once again with another episode of the Iron Man podcast, episode 366 with Mr. Bill Moss.
Mouse.
Actually, Mouse.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Good thing I got confused. It. Not to be confused with Art Spiegelman in any way, shape, or form. just so you know.
Awesome. So, let's start off right here. How sure. was your life growing up?
Wow, he's just going right into
I gotta go
cold,
deep.
You gotta, cold
you
open.
Gotta go just, you got to go raw and you got to go deep. That's what they told me.
all right. Well, you know, I'm a Puerto Rican kid that was born in Queens, New York, and I ended up watching a lot of Adam West, Batman, and Star Trek, the original series, growing up, and now I draw comics. We did a leap from 1970 to now.
So I know you probably know what's been going on in New York for a little bit at this point. New York's it's a crazy place. Because another guy I had on, he said he was from Queens, and he said Queens is not like what the Bronx is or Brooklyn. And I'm like, does anybody want to live in the Bronx anymore?
The
Bronx?
No. Yeah, the different boroughs have. Yeah, the boroughs have their own personality. I lived there till I was probably like, I don't know. I was born there and I lived there till I was probably 8 years old, something like that. And then my dad is a Navy guy. So the family moved around a little bit. So a real shock to the system. We moved from like a Puerto Rican background in New York City to Goose Creek, South Carolina.
What a jump that is.
That's a jump and a half. Yeah. So we lived there for a few years. And really, I grew up here where I live right now. I live in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Virginia. Okay. How you like it out there, actually?
It's fine. You know, it's middle of the road for everything, I feel like. There's a good mix of people because it's a Navy town also.
Okay.
So there's like you know, population-wise, like it's pretty mixed and it's pretty even, and you get to meet a little bit of everybody, which is good. That's how I grew up. That's how I went to like junior high school and high school and college and things. I did live out in San Diego when I first started drawing comics and getting
Holy
into
crap.
The art field. Yeah. I lived out there for about 10 or 12 years.
I'm in California. So I know whenever anybody comes on and says I was in California, I know how you feel. California is a like people think New York's a different beast, or you know, South Carolina or Virginia where you used to live. Come to California, your life will be changed in ways you probably never even thought.
Oh, dude, yeah, I think of that life as like a specific box of of my life, you know. But I love that energy because, like, when I moved away. It was one of those things. I just graduated like my community college this year. It's like I finally took some art classes or whatever. And since I grew up here, all my friends are here. All my, you know, my roots are here. So when I followed my parents out to San Diego, that's the reason I went to San Diego. My dad, that was like one of his last tour of duties or whatever before he retired. So I was just like, oh, San Diego, that's where people go to be actors and artists and musicians, you know, that kind of that vibe, you know. So I went, and since I didn't have my friends, my support system or anything like that, I did have a roof over my head. I mean, I was just out of college, still living at my parents' house. So I just decided then that no matter what the job was, that it was going to be something art related, just to try and start climbing that ladder and find something, you know, find out where I could find my place, you know, as far as. You know, so I did a little bit of everything, man. I did some back when I had some hair. I did some
now some modeling. Now you got the Dark Knight Rises Bane look actually going on.
Oh, dude, yeah, no. When my hair grows out, it's actually a big Puerto Rican fro. My hair doesn't get long; it just gets big. so unfortunately, God took that away. I guess I complained about it enough that I couldn't straighten it out or do things with it or whatever. So now I just shave my head. So it's one of those things, you know, age and circumstance.
So I'll ask you, since you basically lived in about four different states, which is the state you would prefer to live in?
If I had a choice, I would love to still live out in San Diego. But there's
you know,
a lot
it's really expensive, actually.
That's the thing. So it's like I became a single dad through a Jerry Springer, you know, little chain of events. You know, when my daughter was two, so I needed to be responsible for her and you know, kind of like make sure that I was taking care of her and give her
makes sense. Yeah.
So I left West Coast and came back to Virginia because I still have family here. I still have a support system here, cheaper cost of living. All of those things added up to, you know, like San Diego is a great place to be if you're a single person trying to do creative things. Especially like my family out there, my ex-wife's family, I mean, we're still family. I'm still connected to them completely. Like a large, my daughter is like all the Latin. She's half Puerto Rican and half Mexican. So she's got.
When you said that happened with your Jerry Springer moment, she was 2. I imagine she's like almost like 15 now at this point.
Oh, dude, she's 26 now.
She's 26. Oh, God.
Yeah, she's 26. Okay, you know. She's actually been working in the industry in comics. She's been coloring graphic novels now for about 10 years.
Oh, okay. Like father, like daughter. And hey, yeah. so technically, isn't your daughter kind of like a minority in comics since like it's mostly a dude field, actually?
She's a Puerto Rican Mexican. But if you look at her, she's Puerto Rican in California.
She's also a minority in the comics industry. Okay. Just makes sense.
Yeah. And if you look at her face, everybody always mistakes her for Korean or Asian. Mm-hmm. So I found the code, man. I found the code. It's like if you just mix the right amount of Puerto Rican with the right amount of Irish. With the right amount of Mexican, you get Asian. So she's a happy camper. I tried to push her away from comics, actually, for a long time, just because the art field is a roller coaster ride of a life.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you're doing really well for a while, then you're in between projects for a while, and, you know, it could go up and down.
What was it also because, like, people, I mean – I've never said that all guys in the industry are like this, but you know, there could be some real sleazy people in like the industry, and also being a girl, you know, they could be like,
oh, random for advances, sure. That's any creative industry. I totally agree with you. Yeah. You know, if she was going to be a model or if she was going to be, you know, doing whatever, it's like, there's always if you're going to get this part, we're going to, you know, it's like do something sleazy. For sure. You know, it's like, there's always that aspect, but I even found that, There was a short time where I was supplementing my income with some working at a car repair place.
That's when you can repair cars? Holy crap!
Oh, I can't do shit. I'm fine. but I knew how to speak broken English and Spanish, so I was a very big asset at this store because there's a lot of people that would come in to get their stuff done, and some of them couldn't speak English. You know, some of them they would speak very broken English. And since my mom always spoke really broken English, like I can just make sense out of it. So even if it wasn't Spanish, I could figure out what they wanted. So it's like, yeah, give them the bill. Give them the bill. So I did that for like 5 years or so. And then went right back into full-time comics again. So it's like, I've been doing comics now as far as the years that count, I've been doing comics for over 30 years now. It's like, I started in 91. With my first gig, and so
you around since Image started essentially.
Oh yeah, we actually Don Chin and I co-founded Parody Press and Entity Comics. Those are the two imprints that we were self-publishing under, and that was like right when Image came out, right when the guys split from their 9-to-5s and created Image. That's when we were also in that self-publishing bubble. And the 90s were magic, dude. It's like we used to have tons of distributors. We used to have even if all the comic shops that were part of our, you know, distributor network and stuff like that, because we had so many different catalogs that we actually sold our books through. If they only just took a chance and bought like a couple books, like we were fine. Like we were good.
This was also in an economy where if someone bought like 50 books, you're good, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's like, and that's been, and we used to complain back then that books were $4.99, $5.99. Yeah. It's like, oh man, things are getting super expensive. And then all of a sudden, gas and printing and paper and everything else went through the roof. Mm-hmm. So now buying a comic book is like a $15, $20 thing.
Right.
And as you know, and then when we're doing Kickstarters, we have to treat the Kickstarter like a band dropping an album, because we're not actually you know, publishing monthly and being on the shelf monthly. So we treat it like an event. So that's where a lot of the stretch goals come in and a lot of the interaction comes in, and just to make it a lot more fun and make everybody feel like they're a part of it, because they are, first of all. And it's much more of an event as opposed to, oh, this is just the next issue for this month. This is June. You know, it's like... You know, so something to justify the cost, because yeah, Kickstarter issues, right, they're just so much more than the $3 issues that I would look forward, right, to when I was first collecting myself.
And then obviously, if you're a self-publisher and you do everything by yourself, or I think you have a team. I don't know, actually.
Well, I do a couple of different things. I function as a freelancer. Like, that's kind of like my core. I function as a freelancer. I still own the imprint for Entity Comics, and I kind of use that as my studio imprint when I do things on my own, and I print like artist proof editions or something like that. But like right now with the Nera X Kickstarter for Dark Seas number 2, that's a Kickstarter now that's going to end in a couple days. Committed Comics is actually my regular retail publisher for that specific title. Okay. And then I have like a non-exclusive, we're almost like partners as opposed to me exclusively publishing through them. So there's a lot of things that I do with Nera on the side to, you know, have like more issues and more stories and things like that. Committed is kind of like home base. And that's, you know, the Kickstarter is based through there. So technically I have a team because of Committed Comics. And then, and I freelance for like probably 20 or 30 different clients always. Like, I have to juggle a lot of people. Yeah, yeah.
What is your specialty? Are you a letterer, artist, writer, interior designer?
I've had to, because of the way the industry has unfolded over the years, I'm basically a penciler and a writer. It's like, especially with Parody Press, I pencil really fast. That's my strong suit is penciling. Coming up with concept and writing is like, I love writing my own stuff, especially because when I'm working on the book, I can make changes as I go along because better ideas come in, or a better stream of scenes, you know, plays better in the book. You know, there's no rigid structure. But I also work with teams where somebody else is writing, somebody else is coloring. But over the years, I've had to do all of these different things because, you know, we couldn't afford to hire a team anymore. So I had to get more proficient at inking. I had to get more proficient at lettering. I had to get more proficient at doing just about everything. I do everything right now except for driving the truck to the customer's house and delivering the books myself. But it's more out of necessity than like when I first started, I didn't have the desire to actually just do the whole thing. I enjoyed working with a team of people. I enjoyed working with you know, a penciler, an inker, a letterer. You know, having people to bounce ideas off of and working with people, that's what makes it fun also. So it's like, you have to do both. There's no one way to do it. It's like for each specific project, you got to pick and choose what way is going to work best, you know? So
your things are Entity Comics, Parody Press, and you have Committed Comics, right?
Yeah, Committed Comics, I work with them. That's actually Tom Doherty. He's the publisher at Committed. I own the Entity Comics imprint. Don Chin actually owns the Parody Press imprint. I own Entity Comics.
Okay. You had this book on your Twitter profile called Intergalactic Ninja. I thought that just sounded cool as hell.
That's actually our next book. That Zen Intergalactic Ninja is it's a very, very cool book. And that's actually, I have a lot to be thankful for that book, because Nera X, and that's my creator-owned title. I was able to actually introduce Nera into the first issue of Zen that we ever published back in '93. Mm-hmm. So a lot, and he allowed me to write that book, which was it's still kind of unprecedented that somebody other than Steve Stern or Dan Cody would actually be writing the books. Those are the co-creators of Zen. So I feel very privileged that they allowed me to do that. But they also allowed me to introduce all of my characters into the book, which I still own. And I get to publish and use them, and I get to say that, oh, they made their first appearance, you know, 30 years ago in this particular book. You know, I don't like being older. I don't like the idea of eventually turning into an old man. But I do like the bragging rights of saying, it's like, no, I've actually been here for a while. You know, I've survived in the small press for a certain amount of time.
Because it's crazy that you mentioned that. Is people that have been a little bit older in the scene, like you, Some people just go, oh, that's cool. In other industries, if you are considered a veteran, you have some pretty good status there. I realize with comics, everything is just bizarre world. Everything is backwards.
It's whatever your latest project is. If that's popular, then you're popular. It's like when I was
kind of like, what you done for me recently, kind of thing.
It's like, what have you done for me lately? It's like, what's the newest thing? And if somebody's been in the industry for a long time, it's like, they almost look at him like, aren't you retired yet? Aren't you done? Because, like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's almost.
Or you could be what happened with Heidi McDonald, where she thinks half the comic fans died off. They just died.
Maybe. You know, it's like, I don't know. I know a lot of comic. We lost when all the distributors started going out of business because a couple distributors went exclusive with Marvel, DC, and a couple other publishers. We used to have like 30 different distributors, like everywhere. Like there's just all these distributors that we would order our books, you know, once a month and bring them in. And it boiled down to two distributors. And eventually, you know, we have one distributor that basically takes care of, you know, like direct market, that sort of thing. So it was a different time. And in the 90s, and I would say up till shortly after the 2000 rolled in, when you're at a convention and there was somebody of like a veteran status, they were really looked up to. They had a long line. They had a, you know. And then I'm looking at the way things unfolded after 2000. Slowly but surely, it's like, why aren't people in line for this guy? This guy's been doing it for like 50 years. You know, it's like, you know, he's got stuff that was that sold through the roof. You know, he's like famous. But since, you know, kids, and part of it is that I don't really even blame the younger people coming up, because they have to, if nobody tells you that these people are who they are, how do you know? You know, it's like, it's not your job to research everything under the sun and make sure that you're as, you know, so it's part of the thing of promotion, part of the thing of the way that they advertise books and advertise creators. And I sort of think that after Image got started, that the larger companies stopped treating their artists like superstars. They stopped treating their artists and writers like they were the lead actor in their movies, because they're afraid that they would get famous and run off and do their own thing and take all their fans with them. So I think on a certain level that hurts the, you know, because presentation is everything. So I think it hurt the mystique of the superstar artist or the superstar writer being known just for their name. You know, it's like when I was a kid, we go see a movie. It's like, I didn't even know the title of the movie. It was an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Yeah. You know, it's like, he was the top biller. It's like, okay, he's either going to shoot people or beat them up. It's going to be fun. Let's go. You know, it's like, you know, it's a.
How you doing, man?
Cool.
Oh yeah. Cause that's the thing with comic books is, do you think it was better when it had that allure to it? Like it was mysterious. I think I don't want to be one of those guys that say back in my day, but back when things were a little bit more aloof and a lot more mysterious, they felt a lot, like, I don't know. It felt a lot more intriguing.
It's a double-edged sword. I mean, the idea of being totally accessible online to people, you know, people actually see us talking, and we didn't have that before. You know, you show up at a show, it's just like, wow, that's what the artist looks like. He's like a mysterious superstar guy that drew this book that I've been collecting for years or whatever, right? Like some of that, I think it hurts movie stars more than, say, comic book artists, you know, that have to take away that mystique. You know, it's like, I like being connected directly to whatever fans are buying my book. I like listening directly to them and getting their ideas and their feedback. And I think that they enjoy being able to talk back and forth, and they see that their ideas are actually influencing me as to what I do in the books. I think that's a lot of fun. I think what kind of hurt comic book, it hurts the industry, I think, but not billing your artists as the draw. Like I remember, like when Image first started, I was buying Spawn because it was Todd McFarlane. I was buying Cyberforce because it was Mark Silvestri. You know what I mean? It's like whatever he was going to draw, I knew that it was going to kick ass. I knew that it was going to be something that I would like. And then I would get into the story, start reading it, you know, so, and that would actually keep me interested in the book. But, you know, having the artist or the writer being the top bill talent that you're selling your product with, it's lost. I mean, I think we're trying to bring it back now through, you know, because the larger companies are kind of pulling back, I feel. You know, you see that amount of product is pulling back, and you see that the niche that's starting to fill up are all of the independents and smaller books that are coming up through Kickstarter and coming, like we're finding ways of reaching our audience because we're unable to do it through another way. And now people are getting used to actually looking at Indiegogo and Kickstarter for, oh, like let's see what the new stuff is. Let's see where, you know, what is the new comic book? What are the cool ideas? What are the, you know?
So what are things that you think, because you've been, I don't know, well, first of all, I'll start it this way. How long have you been doing indie comics? Or before that, have you ever worked for the mainstream as well?
I've never worked for the mainstream. I've dipped my toes in the pool with like easy things, like card sets. You know, like I've done like Lady Death card sets, Vampirella card sets, Marvel, DC, Star Wars. You know, but you know, very very simple project because you know it's just you
like
know,
tabletop games or something like that.
No, actually, original sketch card art that would be included with a deck.
Okay,
You know, for whatever new. New deck of cards that they were coming out with for that particular promo and, and whatnot. So I've dipped my toes in it. I have lots of friends that are working for the bigger companies. I actually worked for an animation studio. And I'm only bringing this up because I had the exact same experience when I talk to people that are much more popular than I am on the totem pole. You know, they're working on like big names that are way above the radar. Okay. And they usually have conversations with me that revolve around, man, I wish I could do what I want to do instead of being stuck in the machine. Like it's always a dream to draw like one of those big books. But at the same time, it's not the dream to be kind of corporate and kind of, you know, like once you're part of the machine and you have to, I don't know, some of my friends haven't enjoyed it as much as I thought. So every time I get my nerve up and I'm just like, oh man, I'd really like to draw like Spider-Man or something. So I'm going to work my way up to doing that. Cause that would be a bucket list item for me personally to draw like a Spider-Man or a Batman issue or something like that. I always hear from somebody about like, you know, the working environment or the creative environment or something like that. When I was in animation, I had the same situation. I worked in animation for a while. I was working on Attack of the Killer Tomatoes for Saturday morning TV.
No way. And, that's cool. And
the character that I worked on was Mamato. That was like my character that I would work on. And a lot of the guys that I worked with, they worked on Simpsons. They worked on Batman, the animated series. They worked on all, you know, I looked up to these guys because I'm just like, whoa, like that's really cool. I'm glad that I'm even involved. Right. But at the same time, as soon as that season or, you know, that particular series was over, they had to pick up and move to another state to, because that's where the studio was, where they would be working on the next animated feature that they're working on. It's a very difficult life, very hard hours. And for somebody who loves that, more power to them. That's awesome. I tend to want to do what I feel like doing in the moment if I can get away with it, right? It's and I tend to write my books that way. It's like, what do I feel like drawing for this series? Like for this particular series, like for Near X Dark Seas, I just felt like drawing pirates and zombies, dude. It's like so I was just like, you know what'd be fun? Like pirates and zombies. And I've got some backstory and some lore that I could draw on from some of our 90s books. So I could bring some of those characters back that kind of like fit that theme. And it's you know, it's hot chicks and laser guns and spaceships and shit, but it's also pirates and zombies. So it's like it's just a lot of fun. It's a lot of really 90s style adventure action, you know, and it's just a lot of fun. It's just escapist entertainment. You know, you just want to escape to a place, have fun for a few minutes, and it's just like cool.
This is what I wanted to ask you with some of your friends that worked for Marvel and DC. Obviously, no, not names, because you know how that works. You know,
oh, never. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah. No. Have they told? So are the things that people say online some of the things that they echo to you? As far as like quality of the books not being there, there have been some concerns that the industry might be in trouble. Like, you know how like generally like as fans, we think we know what's going on.
There's a sprinkling of that because you can apply the rules of any real job to an industry job. Okay. So even though you're doing something fun, you're doing comic books, or if you're making movies, or if you're producing music, you know, it's like there is an aspect of it that it crosses over with whatever day job you've got. Hmm. You know, there's always somebody in charge. There's always several people that are managing or whatever, and people disagree with each other. Then there's a working environment. Do those people get along? There's a schedule, there's deadlines. If you don't meet your deadline, none of us get paid. You know what I mean? So now there's that stress of making sure that you make your deadline, making sure that the work is up to par. But then at the same time, there's differences of opinion creatively about what the audience really wants. or, you know, there's just a million different things that could come into play. That's all like real, real life job kind of situations. It's not that there's conspiracy theories or anything like weird. It's just normal job things that, that mm-hmm. can suck the love out of your art, you know, mm-hmm. because, and that's the difference between somebody who does art, for a living and turns it into a job. It takes a certain amount of patience and it takes a certain kind of person to do it as a job where all of these things come into play, you know, deadline, finances, whether or not people like it or not, whether or not people hate it and they tear you up for it. And then you have to keep mm-hmm. moving forward. And, you know, it's like, well, if you didn't like it, cool. Maybe the next thing you'll like it. You know, I'll do my best to improve or whatever. Those are the hurdles that you go through as a creative person to keep doing this. Mm-hmm. because you got to take those hits and still move forward. I did something when I first started. I worked at SeaWorld in San Diego drawing caricatures, dude. Mm-hmm. That was boot camp. That will teach you. That will teach you whether or not you have enough patience or a thick enough skin. Because yes. you can't be too sensitive about your art, even though your art is an extension of yourself.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Art is like, one of those things where, since you're the one who's doing it and putting many hours in it, there's mm-hmm. so much inherent bias towards it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, even something simple like, you know, I just spent 12 hours creating this page. I give it to yes. somebody who's going to approve it, edit it, you know, whatever it is, right? They look at it for 5 minutes and they're just like, oh, move this over here, like just 5 inches and it'll be fine. And I'm like, oh, so you mean take 8 hours and redraw it completely, you know, unless I digitally inked it, maybe I could slide it over and just redraw yeah. what was behind mm-hmm. it. But, you know, a simple statement like that could mean 8 more hours of work for you. You know, so it's like the amount of stress that he just, you know, this person just threw on top of you, kind of casual.
Right.
You know, so there's things like that. When I was doing caricatures, mm-hmm. the reason I always think of that as boot camp is because, first of all, you got to draw them really fast because people get bored really quick. So it's like they're at SeaWorld. Yeah, they want to go see the next show or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Or get some food or whatever. So going to sit down, have some fun for 5 minutes. You're going to draw this really fast, airbrush it really fast. And then you have to show it to them. And then even if they don't like it, you're like, yeah, that's $20. You got to give me 20. So you pray to God that everybody likes it. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, that's, you know, that's the thing you learn. It's like, cause there's, you almost have to learn through failure and mistakes and embarrassments. Mm-hmm. I remember there was a person that sat down. And the person next to me, we had two artists in our booth. So the person next to me drew the caricature. And I was just like, I was sort of like spared the embarrassments, but it's still a good story because it's just lesson worthy for anybody who's an artist coming up. They drew the caricature. They did a fine job with it. There's nothing wrong with this caricature. It was fun. It wasn't insulting. You know, that's the line you draw with those caricatures. Like you want to make it right. fun and warped, mm-hmm. but not insulting. You're laughing with them, not at them. You know, so there's always that balance, right? You're trying to make friends. You want them to come back, right? You know, this is supposed to be fun. So they drew the caricature, ended up perfectly fine. But the person sitting down almost started crying because they were so upset. They assumed that it was going to be a portrait, not a cartoon, and which, you know, we have examples all over the booth. It's cartoons, you know, left and right. You know, it's funny caricatures. They thought it was going to be a photorealistic portrait of some kind. You know, how do you deal with that situation? You know, yeah. that's somebody that, you know, came here from wherever, you know, from out of town, and they thought they were being entertained for a few minutes, and now they're just completely upset. And now you're upset, you know, because you didn't do what they thought you were going to do. And, you know, so you can apply that type of lesson learning to anything, really. It's like, you know, working at the car place. You know, if I fix the car and I end up screwing it up, you know, it's like switch the tires around. Now your car's going in reverse. I don't know what's mm-hmm. going on. You know, trying to figure it out.
You've been all around. You've essentially been an indie creator. You worked in animation, you said. How was that? Because you worked animation for a big studio, and you said the thing you were working on.
Yeah.
What would be something that you could tell people that they don't see when a person is working on like an animation for a studio? Like something that they just won't notice?
Something that you don't know, especially for the way we were animating that particular show.
Yes.
Is that there is a team. There comes my daughter. My daughter's bringing me tacos. That's the famous that's the famous cat mouse.
Hi.
Hello. I like tacos.
I brought you taco Ooh. And I brought you fresh water.
All right, you know what I'm doing after the show. Now you know what I'm I'm not gonna chew tacos while we're trying to talk.
We're gonna eat downstairs.
Okay. Thanks, big girl. So yeah, that's my 26-year-old delivery saving my life.
Who needs DoorDash? You can just have your kid do it. That's why you raise them, to give you DoorDash. Oh, you can be on a podcast on the internet. That's why you raise them all.
From tacos. Okay, tacos, back to animation. Okay, so something you wouldn't know from the animation studio is there's a team of people that all they do are backgrounds. And then their digital backgrounds are they really had a proprietary software. It was a very strange painting program. I've never seen anything like it. But all of their backgrounds ended up looking like real cool rendered, like oil paintings and stuff like that, you know, for those animated backgrounds. And there was a team of us that were creating characters. Now the character, like I said, I worked on Momato. That means I had to draw Momato from every single angle this way, every single angle this way, different facial expressions, different this. So then another team of people actually did the animation and actually put all of that clip art that we were creating. So they weren't actually drawing it as they were going along. They were matching the clip art to the soundtrack that was, that was provided earlier, you know, right. For whoever's doing the voice acting. Oh,
this is what people don't understand about animation, dude. It's like everyone just looks at animation and go, it's just like cartoons. It's like, guys, animation arguably has much more things you have to make sure they're technically well put together in than live action. Because with live action, all the stuff you just said there wouldn't matter with live action. You just have two people acting. They put a background up. And you just say action and you start acting. With what you just said right there, backgrounds have to be there. The actual characters have to be in the background itself. You have to design the world that they're living. You have to make sure the music's playing potentially right there. You have to make sure the voice acting is synced up properly. All
that is a team of people. That is crazy.
So doesn't it make you lose your hair? Oh, sorry. They'll make you lose your brain.
I won't take it personal.
It must make you lose your mind when people say, animation's a lot more easier. It's like, bro, you are retarded if you think that.
It's quite the process. And I got to download.
Is it more expensive, do you think? Because I don't know if you've ever been in
Live action. It depends on the kind of animation. It depends on the kind of animation.
So the budget you guys were given, was it like something good enough to get?
I'm not even aware of what the budget was. That wasn't my department. How much money they were juggling around. It's none of our business how much money they're juggling. Because that's corporate. They deal with who's actually running ads during the show, because it's like regular TV, right? So he's got it's a whole different level. I just concentrated on Momato, and then we would always play like hacky sack at 3 a.m. before leaving. that was how you loosened up.
Hacky Sack was fun. I like the game. No, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's a fun game. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So with indie comics, what do you think generally holds someone back from not fulfilling a campaign? Do you think it's because people don't like what they presented in a campaign, or is it really just not the money's not there right now? Because, obviously Joe Biden's a great president. We have so much money running through the country right now.
Sometimes it could be a lot of things. It could be so many things.
Right.
For instance, like if your campaign is not doing well, it could be as simply because there's a lot of campaigns out there now.
Saturation is a thing.
Saturation is a thing. I noticed even when I was doing, when Don and I were publishing Parody Press, I was drawing myself. We were publishing a lot of books every month. Sometimes I would actually draw 3, maybe 4 books in a month.
You're insane. Insane.
Yeah. It was crazy. I was much younger. Younger.
You must have been working like 14-hour days to do that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I was working all the time. And I think people paid me to get better. So I look at some of my artwork from back then, and I'm just like, wow, people bought this. It wasn't that good. So luckily people had a good time and supported me and allowed me to get better at my craft. But there's a lot of reasons why your campaign might be going good. First foremost, there's a lot of campaigns, okay? Second of all, you might also sometimes you have to face a hard truth. Like, not everything I draw is something people want to see. You know, it might not be, and it might be fantastic artwork. I'm not even trying to say that, oh, like, you're horrible, maybe you should practice more and then launch a Kickstarter later, which is a reality. I mean, that's all of us. That's not specifically geared or pointing at a specific person. When I first started drawing comics, it would be a long time before I ever actually got my first gig, actually getting paid to do comics. So there's that. I mean, it's a gate, but it's a gate that you control yourself. You got to put in the pilot hours. I guess that's a good way to sort of put an analogy on it. It's like, it just takes a certain amount of time to get good enough at your craft that people will take to it and actually, you know, pay money, real money for it. And there's lots of other things. It might be the subject matter. It might be like my daughter, Kat, she loves dragons. You know, she sees some of the comic books that I buy, and it's just like, it's not that she thinks they're bad or like she hates them or anything. It's just, it's not what she's interested in.
Yeah, it's preference.
I break out something with dragons, and it might be a mediocre book, but she loves dragons. So she's going to check it out, you know, it's like, and see what it's all about. So it could be subject matter, could be timing, could be so many different things, you know? So yeah, it's like, don't be hard on yourself if it doesn't, you know, if a campaign doesn't fulfill, or if it's not doing well, or if it just barely scraped by, because there's so many real world reasons that have nothing to do with anybody attacking your person, you know, that it might not be doing as well as you want. And you just keep on moving forward. You just,
also it's price too. Cause I mean, you grew up buying comic books, you know, pull list, you understand. Mm-hmm. But a pull list, if you have like four characters and those books are all like $4.99, $5.99, that's already like almost $30 there itself. You factor in one indie campaign is already going to be like $25 to $30 in general. Exactly. If you back like three campaigns, that's about almost $90 in books you haven't even received yet.
Right, exactly. So you're taking
$90 in three campaigns.
And to spend that much money on something that maybe you've never seen or heard of before, you might hold back. Not because you think it's bad, but because you just never seen it before. You've never been able to try it before.
Not a proof of, it's the whole proof of concept kind of thing. Because like, I know people would say, well, why would people go and buy the Marvel and DC stuff when they know it's not that good? It's not. It's cheaper, and you already know. Hey, I have one title here that I like, and it's not that good, but it's cheaper. Yeah. That's it. You know.
And then my daughter is. I mean, she's 26, so she tells me like, the generation that's coming up now. Of professional artists have a different, first of all, they have a different set of tools available to them than we did when we were first coming up. So she's like, well, why don't you start a webtoon and make it free so that they can read it and just keep that webtoon going for a while. That way, when you do drop your Kickstarter, they feel connected to, you know, if it's something that they like, they're already reading it. They didn't have to pay anything to get to know what it's all about. And then when you drop your Kickstarter, you've got those built-in fans that are more likely to actually support your book because it already has a track record. Oh, I like reading that already. And now it's going to be a book. Now it's like a premium format kind of thing where it's like I could put it on my shelf and actually collect it. So that could be, you know, that's a super viable way of reaching more people.
A lot of campaigns don't do so well. Marketing. I feel like people don't know how to really effectively market so well.
No, none of us are good at marketing. We're like
kind of close. Yeah.
I got to wear a lot of hats now just because of the atmosphere that we live in right now. We have to do everything. And all of us have, you know, some type of online presence, some type of YouTube presence. I just did we did a show with a good friend Dave Brink, and in part of his intro
Perfect 10.
Dave is great. I love, there's a little quote in his intro that he plays before the show starts, and it's just like, I'm not a YouTuber, I just want to sell comic books. It's like it's so honest and it's so upfront that I'm just like, dude, I love this guy.
More eyes were on his stuff. His stuff is like, I haven't bought it yet because he's from the Netherlands. That would cost a lot of money to get that shit over here. But I've seen the art. I've seen the stuff from his website. I think his stuff deserves a little bit more attention, honestly.
No, I love it. Yeah, I really like his stuff. I was lucky enough to do a pinup page for one of his issues. I was glad I was able to do that. And we're actually kind of talking about maybe doing a little something in the near future. So I'll reveal that when it comes up. You know, once
you're going to be doing an interracial book with a black guy dating a white girl. That'll sell tons of books on Indiegogo. No, I've never seen
that before. It's like, yeah, as long as it's something thing, cool. Yeah, yeah.
The other thing that I think hurts some of the people is, some of the fighting, constant back and forth.
I'm not. I understand why some people are drawn to it, or why some people use that to get more clicks. Because everything else on the internet, I mean, outside of comics, most things outside of the internet, in the Twitter sphere and in the in the X sphere. I'm sorry, X.
Or social media sphere.
Call the social media sphere. More people will click on arguments and fights and bad things than they will click on things that are just happy hunky dory and moving along smoothly. So I understand from one standpoint why they're doing that. I don't want that formula for myself. I'm not a drama person. I like to get along with everybody, you know, and I like to hear what everybody thinks. And when I do a book, I like to like actually talk back and forth with people. And, you know, it's not about, oh man, this other guy like drew this and I'm going to battle with him now. This isn't like a rap battle back in the 80s. You know, it's not. Not supposed to
be. Yeah, that's what it kind of feels like. It's almost like rappers back in the day just having
somebody's going to end up going to their art table and getting beat up. You know,
even if these guys met up with each other at like cons or whatever in their areas, they ain't about that life. They ain't about to do literally nothing. You know what they're going to do, people? About to look at each other, cockeye, and walk away. That's what's going to happen.
And then make a YouTube video out of it. You know, they'll record all of it and make drama so that everybody can argue about it, right? But it's not a WWE SmackDown. It's just like
I just want
to put out my book and I want people to enjoy it. That's it. You know, that's all there is to it.
If we were arguing about the contents of the book.
Well, it's different. You're talking about the characters. It's like, oh, I wish this character would have done this, or I wish the story would have played out this way.
What we need to get to. People would rather talk about everything outside of the comic books or indie comics or whatever than what's actually in the book itself. If you're going back and forth about what's in the books, that's different, because that could just be like, oh, that's whatever. Oh, okay, I'll just, why do you like this character or this piece of dialogue?
It's about talking about the content as opposed to...
Yeah.
Well, just like with movies. I mean, it's like, as upset... I actually shared a lot of the reasons that people were upset over some Star Wars decisions, okay? Character decisions. Story decisions. Sure. Mm-hmm. But I would never jump on that actor's or that writer's personal Twitter account and like badmouth them or beat up on the actual people that are creating it. I would argue the character, but I wouldn't do a personal attack on the person. You know, it gets you nowhere. And it's like, you just want to be mean. You just want to be upset at people. And it's like, so I'm not about all of that. I just want to create books and I want everybody to have a good time.
I didn't get a chance to, I saved this one for last. I didn't get a chance to ask you at first because we were talking about the other stuff first. How did you get into comics actually?
Okay. I'll tell you that. That's kind of a short story. It started out, I was working at SeaWorld drawing caricatures. I was working at SeaWorld. You know, I wanted to do it the normal way, which is you show your portfolio at shows, you get ripped up by a couple of editors, and maybe somebody sees that diamond in the rough and gives you a chance, you know, and you can start working your way up. The way that I got in was, and I've gotten in on a lot of projects over the years simply because I was available, and artists are typically flaky. And things happen where, you know, somebody drops the ball or doesn't want to work on something or they're late. That, you know, those are real things. But when I was working at SeaWorld, a good friend of mine, which I owe a lot to, his name is Bob Hannon. Bob, if you're listening, I owe you a lot. He used to brag all the time that he knew an editor in comics, you know, and we love comics. Comics is like our first love. Right. We're doing caricatures because it's fun and it's art related and we're making money. But if we could do comics, we totally leave this job. You know, it's like, absolutely. So he would brag to me all the time that he knew an editor. And lo and behold, he did. So I would tell him all the time. I was like, because I wanted success for him. It wasn't like I was trying to use him to get to a thing, right? I wanted him to get something, so to show me that he knows an editor or whatever. It's like, you should call him. You should. So I kept on pushing him over I don't know how long, and he finally did call. He finally did talk to this editor, and he got the gig. So I was just like, dude, that's awesome. You know, it's like high five, blah, blah, blah. We go to work. No big deal. A couple of days later, he finally gets the details from the gig. And the deadline that they have for him is crazy. It's impossible. Like, it's this like 1 week deadline to get this book done from scratch, you know? And so what ended up happening was he asked me for my help to finish this book. So I ended up being the penciler on this book. He was the inker. The writer of that particular book happened to be Don Chin, who I later founded Parody Press with, right? So that's how I met Don in the first place. And that was a book called X-Farce for Eclipse Comics. And I think we sold like 80,000 copies.
That's ridiculous. Holy
crap. It's ridiculous. But at the same time, and we did a couple more books for Eclipse after that. After that first gig, like it just kept on, I just kept on making sure that I was available with other things. So after we did a few issues for Eclipse, Don talked to me about, hey, you know, forming Parody Press Comics and this and that. We both moved out of state. We actually both moved to Virginia for some years just to keep our studios close. Because it was easier to get production done if we were just like close to each other.
Did you buy growing up as a kid? Did you get more Marvel or DC or mixture of both?
I remember getting those big Star Wars Treasury books when Star Wars first came out. I remember getting a big Treasury book that was Spider-Man versus the Hulk at the Olympics. I love that book. I still have it. I mean, it's like it's old. It's torn up, but it's like, but I love that book. So I used to buy like Spider-Man and Batman books primarily. The thing that got me into wanting to draw sequential art, though, the thing that actually inspired me to want to actually draw sequential art in the first place and tell stories, it was Cracked Magazine, of all places. So there's an artist at Cracked Magazine named John Severin, and he did parodies of basically the TV lineup that I was watching at the time. It was like Knight Rider, A-Team, you know, Star Wars. Like he was doing parodies of all the stuff that I was watching. And I got really, really sucked into his art style. And that's what made me want to get into sequential art instead of just doing pinups and doing splash, you know.
How do you improve at your sequential art? Because I'm pretty sure that's probably the hardest thing you've had to do.
It's the most difficult, but I was also very interested in broadcasting and television and filmmaking. I took a lot of courses when I was going to college for that also. I took photography courses and things like that. Mm-hmm. And for filmmaking and, you know, writing and filmmaking and stuff like that, you have to do storyboards for your sequence and for whatever it is that you're making.
Yep.
So you're making storyboards. So actually doing those storyboards helped me a lot.
I didn't even know what a storyboard was until I took that film production class in my high school. People wouldn't even know what that is. It's still crazy. I was told the little things are.
But it was such a good teaching tool for drawing comics. Really especially good. Because you're constrained. Like you have the same size box every single time. Mm-hmm. And then you have to be able to look at your storyboard and you need to be able to just read the story without words, without music, without anything, and know what's happening. So once I got like good at doing storyboards, just regular plain old storyboards, and actually conveying all the information that I wanted to tell a story with storyboards, then Image came out and they had these really cool layouts that really broke like a lot of rules, but it really read well. You know, like each page was something that you can actually put up on the wall as a piece of artwork. But it still was maintaining all the rules of storyboarding, just like just like the typical Marvel DC comics that were coming all before then. You know, I remember like I've got some Marvel books that they fit like 20,000 stories into one issue. I don't know how they did it. It's like they're so many panels and so many characters. And then, you know, I was working in a comics right when Image came out, and it was a little bit more like manga, which I like. I like manga. I like anime. And I like the layout.
Yeah,
I like the layout of manga pages because there are very few panels, but there's just like so much energy. And it always goes off the page.
Yeah.
And so I like that. Every once in a while.
With me, growing up, I had more manga than I did actual comics. Like I had a few, but the only title of comics we ever had was Spider-Man stuff and like the encyclopedias. Right. It was like little small. Remember that little black encyclopedia for Spider-Man, like all his villains at the time. Then I got a bigger one at the library, and I was like, this is just God right here. And then I mostly had Shonen Jumps and other manga growing up. People that said manga art feels a little bit cheaper, I was like, no, like manga essentially has to basically the panels in comics are a lot different, as I've always noticed. It feels like the scenes impact more in manga when they're like kind of confined to like these certain areas. I don't know. It just feels right. More immersive.
Oh, exactly. You know? And it's something that you can only do on paper. It's like, you can't really convey that like in another media, you know, the exact way that you can on paper. And I absolutely love it. I was collecting the stuff I was collecting back when I was first starting. It's like Akira, Bubblegum Crisis, Gray. And then Turtles came out. And since it was a black and white book, it kind of got my attention. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, wait a minute, these guys are getting killed. It's like, this is like a serious book. This is not a kiddie book. What's going on with this? It's like, so I really liked the there's a short run of black and white comics from the Turtles that I really liked.
Since you said you liked manga and anime, I'm pretty sure you heard the big news. It was Akira Toriyama passed away.
That's lost, dude. Yeah, for sure. And he's only in his 60s. It's like that feels too young to leave yet. You know, so yeah.
Like the impact he had on people's like if people don't know, Dragon Ball. Mm-hmm. Dragon Ball literally makes you feel things you never even thought you felt. It makes you think about things you never thought you felt. I swear this anime had an effect on people that not many other animes will ever have, honestly. Like, exactly. Not just that it's really popular, it's worldwide. It almost just like gives friendships. It's like an anime that like transcends time, essentially.
Yeah.
I'm going to say the trauma, you know, Stan Lee of, you know, anime. Mm-hmm. Or manga, you say, actually. The thing is, what's the best thing about Akira Toriyama? Like you said earlier back in the show, you never heard his politics. We don't even know what his politics were. None of us give a fuck about that.
Yeah, like, I just want to see the Goku and Vegeta. Exactly. I'm into the story and make some more of it. You know, it's like.
Yeah.
And manga has much more. I've noticed that it's a much more emotional hit and a much more connected. Like the way that we talk about manga, like certain stories, like people really have this emotional connection to the characters as opposed to a lot of Western or American comics where it's just like, okay, you're listening to the story, but I don't feel like so connected to the story that it's like actually making me emotional. You know what I mean? They're cool. I love them. But yeah, it's every media, every culture ish approach towards a certain art form has its own, you know, has its own flavor, its own strengths. And I love that there's a variety. I like that there's a difference between all these things. So we can latch on to different things about it.
What is your favorite animes of all time?
Well, like I said, I was old school. So it's like if I'm watching Bubblegum Crisis or shoot, even in the old days, like just watching Voltron and Transor Z. You know, it's like Mazinga is like, you know, I think, you know, I always got confused because I heard it by both ways. And then when I would visit family in Puerto Rico, I would hear it in Spanish and it would confuse me even more. But I always loved watching it anyway. It's like, it's cool. Like the old Spider-Man cartoons were always cool, you know.
Okay.
You know.
Because I wanted to ask you this.
Throw in one American cartoon in there.
You're fine. The thing I wanted to ask you about, you know, about being a single guy. Is you know, you grew up in a different time period compared to probably some people. Mm-hmm. What is advice you would give to like dudes, men out there actually growing up that are like graduating high school and you know they don't really know what to do, honestly?
Just in life, in general, life, or
life in general,
or like people that are like want to become artists, or
well, it could be like if you don't really have an idea of what you want to do, what would you say to them?
Well, first of all, when you first get out of school, you don't realize just how young you are. It's like your early 20s, that's like workshop phase. Like those are the years for you to try a lot of things and don't worry about the fact that you're going to fail at a lot of things because you're just so young. You have so much time left to take a chance with, I would take more risks, more financial risks and more risks with a job that you're really not sure about or if it pushes you out of your comfort zone a little bit. Those are the years to do it. Try not to play it too safe because it's better to do something and know that you for sure don't want to do a specific kind of job or something like that, because that'll lead you to different places. And not to mention, sometimes you work a job that is not going to be part of your destiny or part of like what you do for the rest of your life. But there are going to be things that you learn from that job that you'll take with you for the rest of your life. I tell you, it's like when I was drawing comics for a number of years, you know, since the 90s, I had to supplement my income from like 2000 to like 2007, something like that. I had to get a real job. I was working at a car place. Very outside my comfort zone, very outside. I didn't think there would be anything that I would take away from this place that would actually help me with what I want to do, which is art, right? There's a million things that I took away from that place that actually helped me with my art. You know, how to deal with people, how to deal with customers, how to be helpful, how to be empathetic. You know, there's so many different just human things. And you use all of that with whatever it is you plan to do, whether you're going to be an artist or whether you're going to be whatever it is you decide to be in this life. You take all that stuff with you and, you know, just put it into your bag of tricks, into your arsenal of things that you now know, and use it when it's appropriate. So that way, you know, it'll benefit you in whatever else other thing you're going to end up doing. So yeah. You're young. So, you know, don't be scared. Don't worry about taking things slow. You know, don't overdo it. I mean, don't be like crazy and do like dangerous things.
Don't do crack.
don't think it's like, well, I mean, let me do the old crack pipe and see how that works for me. But, you know, definitely try lots of different occupations and jobs, and because there'll be things that you learn that you wouldn't have learned any other way, you know, you'll meet people and those will be like life lessons that you'll take with you. And you won't even really realize it until you're older that it's like, wow, I really, you know, like I would have done this if I hadn't done this. And it's like, it's always that thing. So it's like, just, you know, just don't be scared about taking some chances. Yeah. Your youth is the time to do it. not later on.
Mm-hmm. And have you actually been to like a convention or cons for your stuff actually?
Yeah. We've done a lot of shows. We've done a lot of conventions.
What's the atmosphere of those? Cause I know a lot of people have talked about them and people have said nothing but good things. They think cons are the best thing you can do as being an indie artist. Cause you can meet people, sell them your book, make that connection. Yeah.
Like-minded people getting together all in one place, all that. And all of you basically enjoy the same basic things. It's like, yeah, it's a good time. It's a lot of fun. The really big shows, like say San Diego, New York, they can be a little overwhelming because it's just so much media all at once. you kind of have to know maybe ahead of time, like what you're interested in seeing before you get there, just so you can kind of like direct yourself in that direction. A lot of the medium to smaller size shows, they're a lot of fun. You get to connect with a lot of people, and it's a really good time. And you get to see a lot of media. You get to see what everybody's doing in the moment. You get to meet some artists. You typically get to meet, you know, like voice actors or maybe some actors from TV shows that you like and things like that. It's a lot of fun, and it's definitely worth doing. And especially if you like to collect art, you know, and collect comics and try to meet some of the people that probably draw or work on things that you already buy. That's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, and going forward into this year, you're going to be having a campaign on Kickstarter, you said, right?
Yeah, we're ending a campaign in a couple of days. Nira X, Dark Seas, number 2. I think it ends in like 4 days. We just broke 10,000, and I'd like to see as many people jump in as possible. We actually have some art that... I think as long as we stay over the 10,000 mark, this is the original 11x17.
Oh my God, that looks great.
Oh, thanks, dude. It's the original 11x17 inked artwork for one of the covers that we did. Tom, our publisher, is going to put everybody's backer number into a randomizer and pick a winner. So even if you only get the PDF, if you only get the digital tier, your number is still going to be eligible to win this original art. Okay. It's not just for physical tier people. So it's just an extra. We had a goal. Tom had a goal. That's why I have 500 backers up here. But I'll twist his arm a little bit. As long as the campaign stays over 10,000, then we'll go ahead and we'll give this away. So make sure that get everybody to at least get the PDF. If you have never heard of the character before, try the PDF out so that way you can actually just read it. And it's only a few bucks to get the PDF. And then our next Kickstarter coming up March 21st is going to be for Zen Intergalactic Ninja. We're actually doing a crossover with First Comics and Nira X. It's called Zen Bounty Wars, and I'm going to put the link up on all my socials and stuff like that when that launches. Sir. Yeah, I'm trying to get the pre-launch page, or the publisher is trying to get the pre-launch page up and running right now. So as soon as I have the link for that, I'll be able to share that with everybody, and that'll be that. That'll run for the month.
And the last thing I want to ask you before you head out is your website. So what I like about what you have and like other people do is you have your own websites. I feel like having your own websites do give you that nice independence there. So if you wanted to have your physical stuff, you could sell it there. And right here, because people can buy the physical media of your past work, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a couple of books up on my online store. They could pick it up. That's totally cool. I've got some PDFs that they can download for free from the first Nira X series. I occasionally will keep on rotating original artwork out of the store. Mm-hmm. And I'll have new things in there every month or so. So that way people can buy a couple things. And then, and of course my webpage is just right here at billmouse.com. And then you'll find all my links and socials and all that good stuff right there.
All right. And the last thing I'll ask is any shout outs you want to give to anyone in particular and anything else you want to say before we head out?
Please buy my book. Yep. I appreciate everybody. Without the fans and without our friends, we wouldn't be doing this for a living. So everybody would just like and share, even if you're not buying into the campaign, if you just share it with everybody, all that stuff helps me get past the algorithm. Like I said, we're not big promoters. I'm an artist without a team.
Yeah, that's the thing is you guys getting 10K's. Crazy because a lot of Indiegogo campaigns can barely hit like 4-3K. You guys it's are in
difficult.
Like the,
yeah, it's really difficult. So if anybody's not hitting those numbers, like definitely don't hold it against yourself for anything. It's difficult. It's really hard to do that.
Well, thank you for being on the show for the first time, man. Can't wait to have you on again later on this year.
Yeah, for sure, man. It was good to be here, man. Thanks, dude.
Yeah, I'll definitely grab one of your books when I get paid. Help out the indie creators that come on here, obviously, and all you got to do is just make sure you sign it and put a giant dick right on the cover and just send it. Okay, don't actually do that. Then I will snap back. We'll see you guys later. Have a great night, everybody. Peace. Goodbye.